The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Miku, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.
Time and again, these men and women struggled and sacrificed and worked till their hands were raw so that we might live a better life. They saw America as bigger than the sum of our individual ambitions, greater than all the differences of birth or wealth or faction. This is the journey we continue today. We remain the most prosperous, powerful nation on earth. Our workers are no less productive than when this crisis began. Our minds are no less inventive. Our goods and services no less needed than they were last week or last month or last year. Our capacity remains undiminished. But our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed. Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
National coverage, and my colleague and friend Anthony McCarthy joining me here in studio for that, and many of you calling in and writing in with your thoughts about the day. Just an amazing day, and we still want to hear from you today at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. We want to hear what your thoughts are about what happened today, about watching Barack Obama become president of the United States of America, of the feelings that coursed through you as you witnessed this incredible moment where the 44th president of the United States was sworn in. It was an amazing moment, and I was reading through many emails that people have written today. We're going to read some on the air. You can send some more right now at Steiner Show, S-T-E-I-N-E-R, show at gmail.com. And call us here at 410-319-8888. I want to hear your thoughts on what happened today. We're going to hear other clips. We're going to hear a report from Melody Simmons, who reports here for WEAA, and she was Saturday at the event where Barack Obama stopped in Baltimore, and she did a wonderful little recording about that. We're going to play for you in just a little bit as well. You'll hear that and much more and read some other emails that have come in. We'll be talking with Megan Carpenter, who's editor of Jezebel, who is .com, which you can check out as we're talking. She was at the inauguration today. We'll be joined again by LaToya Peterson later on, who's editor of Racialicious.com, who watched the inauguration on television from her home in Silver Spring. And we'll be talking with Dr. Mary Washington, Maryland activist, former candidate, who was on the National Mall today as well. But whether you were there or not, or with your friends, or whether you were at the Senator Theater today had seats 900 people, you know, over on York Road, one of our great old, the great old historic theater of Baltimore. It seats 900 people. Lines were wrapped around the outside. There were well over 1,000 people standing, sitting, weeping, crying, shouting, cheering, as they watched the giant screen and Barack Obama up on that screen. So bring us your thoughts. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. And I will relay some things as well and see if I can't get you to comment on that too. And but first, let us go to our first guest of the hour here, Megan Carpenter, who joins us. And she's editor of Jezebel.com, was at the inauguration. And Megan, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So it's great to have you on the air with us. So tell us, Jezebel's a great site.
Great, thank you.
It is. I can tell you, my producer, Jessica Phillips, has turned me on to all these great sites, yours and Racialicious. I just can't get enough of them now. So it's great to have you with us.
Racialicious is great, actually. LaToya is a really good friend of mine, and she's a fabulous writer.
Yes, she is. So tell us, Megan, about your experience today. Let's just start with what you were. Where were you?
We were actually, I was with an old friend of mine. We were just about southeast of the Washington Monument. So we were sort of between the jumbotrons that were on the official area of the mall between 7th and 14th Street and the jumbotrons that were at the World War II Memorial. So we mostly had a view of other people and sort of a huge swath of people that had come in and had kind of been turned away at the security gates because of delays in the metro system and other things.
So now, I liked your impression. I mean, as a woman and as someone who runs this blog site, which is a really interesting perspective from many women who work on your site and others as well. What were your feelings watching this? What were the emotional, visceral aspects of what you experienced today?
Well, I have to admit, I'm sort of an inveterate people watcher, so had I even been able to sort of see the screen, I probably would have still been watching the people around me. And it was really amazing to see all of the different reactions. We were sort of, as I said, in a crowd of people who, you know, had been basically turned away at three security gates and found this sort of little patch of grass in a place where we could stand and listen to it, but not really see it. And to see the looks on people's faces as they sort of tried to get at least a corner of the screen in their viewpoint. People were climbing on trees. People were actually climbing on top of the porta potty roofs, which seemed a little bad. But just to be able to have a glimpse of a TV screen with a, you know, half a million or a million or 3 million, however many people they're going to eventually say that it was, to just see this. And it was really amazing. There was a mixed race family next to me where, you know, the mother was white and the father was African American, and the daughters, who were probably about 13 or 10 and 10, were crying. And it was just really amazing to sort of be in this group of people that were all reacting in different ways. There was jubilation, there were people crying, there was an old woman who had to be carried off by other people in the crowd because she had fainted. Because we weren't in a secured area, so there was no police presence. We'd sort of all just kind of camped out, and it was just really amazing to see everyone kind of with their friends and their family and holding each other and listening to Obama's speech.
I wonder, though, how you see it as also as a woman, and as I'm going to make an assumption, and if I'm wrong, you can tell me I'm wrong, as a young woman.
Yes. Well, okay. Depends on how you define young, but thank you.
Okay. They wouldn't define me that way anymore, I don't think. But as a woman or young, I just wonder as a woman and who writes often on a blog that that comes from a woman's perspective, and given that this election was also such a tear for a while between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama over the question of woman running for president and not winning, the significance of all that for you at this moment?
Well, I mean, the primaries for me were very interesting because I, you know, to watch that and to see the supporters on both sides of it become so vociferous in their reactions. And then to see after the primaries, you know, and coming into the election season and in the post-election season, to see the Obama supporters really truly embrace Hillary Clinton as this kind of liberal beacon, and some of the same people that had sort of portrayed her as too hawkish and too conservative or too centrist for them compared to Barack Obama really embrace her, and particularly after her confirmation hearings this week, embrace her as a feminist icon, even not just because she'd run, not just because she'd almost won, but because she, you know, has openly said that she's bringing these feminist principles to the Department of State. And if you know enough about politics, you realize that she's doing that with Barack Obama's support and blessing and encouragement. And to see, you know, Hillary Clinton supporters who in the primaries, you know, in many cases said some things that were not very complimentary to him, and in some cases, I think, went over the line in some ways, really turn around and embrace his platform and embrace the women like Karen Kornbluh that he had writing his platform, you know, and weaving women's rights into so many things. I think it's just a really, you know, amazing day that this idea that, you know, when they went to Unity New Hampshire, it was kind of a joke, and there were a lot of people and a lot of Clinton supporters that were very angry. And I think, you know, and a lot of Obama supporters that really still hated Hillary, I think, at that point. And to see it kind of all turn around and become the celebration of, you know, the Democratic Party and liberal values and in particular feminist values being brought to our foreign policy, which is a completely new thing, is really amazing to me.
Just stick with that for a moment, because we're in this particular time right now where I've never experienced nor have I read about in American history nor seen in my lifetime from the time of the election of John F. Kennedy on even to the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy when I was around then as well, and the emotions of those moments were universal, and they were very deep, especially when Robert Kennedy was shot. I mean, it crossed all kinds of racial class spectrums in terms of the emotion and anger and people just being distraught over it. But this is the opposite of distraught. This is a hope that's happened in a way that I've never seen. And I wonder what you think about in terms of both the trepidation that may be involved in all this hope, and where America may be going. And what this says to you as a person who observes politics in America.
I mean, I think Obama's speech was done, you know, in the way that it was done to try to temper some of that hope, that there's hope and there's optimism. And I think, you know, Obama, at least among us, most among us, understands that there's no way to fix all the problems of this country in the first 100 days. And I was talking about this with a friend of mine this afternoon, that there's so much hope and there's so much optimism. And his speech really, the opening of the speech really was designed to say, it is great to have hope and it's great to have optimism. And let's take the energy of this day and work together to fix these problems. But this isn't going to happen tomorrow. The world isn't going to change by the end of the month or the end of the next month, that, you know, our economy and the wars in which our country is involved and the foreign policy that we have been pushed along to accept for the last 8 years, these things can't easily be undone. There's no reversal coming tomorrow. And I think, having watched people listen to the speech, it wasn't just hope. It wasn't just excitement. There was a almost reverence about it. That sort of being in this crowd of people where all you could do was hear.
Mm-hmm.
People were really, I mean, and these are not the people that showed up at like 8 a.m. These are not, you know, your fur wearing, you know, seat having people.
Right.
There were plenty of those on the subway, in the subway this morning. And there were plenty of people like that further along, you know, probably able to actually see Barack Obama himself, or at least, you know, a very vague outline of him from a distance. I mean, these were, you know, everyday Americans that had sort of gathered together and were watching this speech, and there was a reverence. People were shushing. People wanted to hear what he had to say and mm-hmm. were listening to it. And then were cheering at the idea that we are going to have to come together and fix these problems together, and that he can't do it on his own and we can't do it all together by tomorrow. But, I mean, I hope that carries through. I hope that, you know, it carries through. You see already he's in this sort of argument with House Democrats, and particularly with House Speaker Pelosi, about, you know, the tax cuts and the stimulus package and the size of the stimulus package and the makeup of the tax cuts. You see the Republicans already coming down, I think today being a case in point, where Texas Senator John Cornyn demanded a roll call vote on Hillary Clinton's nomination because of the Clinton Foundation questions that came up at her confirmation hearing.
Right.
You know, I mean, you already see people taking their shots at his administration and his plans and his sort of policy primacy, particularly, I mean, in terms of the Democratic Party, I think. And it'll be really interesting to see if the optimism and the hope and the reverence and the willingness to help on the part of Americans carries through the next 100 days or 150 days or 365 days, because it's going to take that long, really, at least until things get better.
I think that's a really interesting analysis. I think that's what we're going to have to watch and see. And I listen, talking to you here, I would encourage you and hope that over the course of the next year that we can call on you a great deal to join us for conversations on the air. I really like to have your mind join us.
I would love to do that. Thank you.
I have a pleasure. One thing, Hillel, before we go and go on to our next guest and listen to another clip, I also kind of liked a great deal that Obama, in his inaugural address, said we are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers. I don't think I've ever heard someone in political office say and non-believers or Muslims.
Oh, no, or Hindus for that matter.
Or Hindus for that matter, exactly, right, exactly.
You know, I mean, America is really a multiplicity of people with a multiplicity of beliefs. And, you know, I'm a very committed agnostic, which is, I guess, sort of a funny thing to say. And my friend that I was...
No, it's not funny at all. It's good. I mean, people need to say that more if they are, because that's part of America. And that's what... his father was an atheist, a free thinker. His grandfather, I mean.
Yeah, no, and my friend actually that I was with was an atheist, and he was saying that was, for him, it was, he appreciated the fact that it was acknowledged that he's part of this country by the President of the United States, that he's sort of welcome here. And I think, you know, having watched the press coverage of election night and having talked to, you know, to a lot of my friends and having read a lot of reports by a lot of other people, this idea that I think you heard repeated, you know, on the air on election night and ever since then in writing, that for the first time, African Americans felt like they were finally accepted in this country, that white people voted for a black president.
Right.
And the sort of joy and the sort of feeling of acceptance that came with that in a way that I can't personally understand, being of the majority race, but this amazing idea that it took that to feel American. I think, you know, this acknowledgement that there are Muslim Americans and Hindu Americans and atheist Americans, and that there is a multiplicity of beliefs in addition to a multiplicity of races and a multiplicity of ideas, and all of those things are American, was really beautiful to hear.
Megan Carpentier, do I have that right?
Yes, you do.
Good, good. Megan Carpentier, editor of Jezebel.com. It's been a pleasure reading your writing, but it's even more of a pleasure to have you on the air. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll do this soon again. Thank you.
Absolutely. Bye.
Bye. We're going to have a number of guests this hour and that are going to join us. But before we go to our next guest, and Tony in Baltimore has called in as well. We'll go to your call, Tony. Hold on. I want to play a little piece for you. No, I was going to play, but it looks like people are calling in. I'll play this after our next cup's on. Tony, why don't you join us as we bring LaToya Peterson on?
Yes, how you doing?
Well, how are you, Tony?
I'm fine. Look, this is the first time I ever called on a talk show.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I usually listen. But what I want to talk about is attitude.
Okay.
Because I listen to the news and I listen to people talk about the attitudes of the youth, the attitudes of people, the insanity that goes on in the streets. And see, I used to be a part of all that back in the day. But what I see at this election, what I see this creation of a new era that's coming from one man stepping up to the plate and expressing himself truly, is bringing us as a people, all people, not just a certain type of people, not just black people, but all people are stepping up and finally they are expressing themselves truly. They're saying to themselves, they are tired of the phonyism. They're tired of staying in the closet with their feelings.
Right.
They want to come out. They want to express themselves. And this election, it was done by a landslide. The primaries were done by a landslide.
Well, it was a landslide, but it was...
This inauguration was done by a huge landslide. I don't think there ever been an inauguration like that.
No, that's true.
And everything that's happening is by a landslide. And what I want to say about the attitudes, and I'll make it short and get off of here so other people can talk.
Okay.
Is that I can see the gangbangers who were listening today.
Yes.
The people in the street who were listening today.
Yes, yes.
There were people that were becoming displaced in this country.
Right.
We'll now get a new attitude from the existence of this new president, and things will come together. I will predict this. And I'm praying for it, and I know it's going to happen here.
Tony?
You mark my word. One day I'll call you back in a couple of years, in a few years, and you will see the change that will happen.
Tony, I appreciate it. I think you're right. And I tell you, I started the day out on my way to do this show. I started the day out on Park Heights Avenue on the west side of town in Park Heights and Cold Spring at I Can't, We Can, which is a very important drug rehabilitation program in the city. And I spoke to... a gathering of poor people, recovering addicts, black and white, struggling to make ends meet, struggling for a new life, who were all going to watch the inauguration together. And I had the privilege of kind of addressing them before it started. And it just made me feel so good. I think you're right about that. And I think that's where America is going. Before we introduce you to LaToya Peterson, who is joining us once again, she's editor at racialicious.com. She watched the inauguration today on TV from her home in Silver Spring. We're going to come right to LaToya's thoughts, but I want to share with you a piece that was done by Melody Simmons that she did Saturday when Barack Obama came to town. So let me share this from WEA reporter Melody Simmons, and listen to this. We'll come right back with LaToya Peterson.
Barack Obama! Barack Obama!
My name's Yvonne. Barack, I think this is a day for all Americans. It's just so wonderful. I've been a teacher for 30-some years, and every year you tell your children that they can be president of the United States. I've taught in the inner city schools. And when I stood in line to vote, tears came to my eyes because I said, yes, you can be president of the United States. So it's just a change for everyone, not just for Black Americans, but for all Americans. And it's just a wonderful day. And I'm glad to be here to see it in history, having to live through the civil rights and being able to see this happen now. It's just a glorious day.
How old are you, may I ask?
Yeah, I'm 55.
So you lived through civil rights and...
Oh, yeah. So tell me, I was burning my bra. I was marching with Cesar Chavez. I was protesting the Vietnam War. I was in Greenpeace. I mean, this is stuff that's really relevant to me, and it's really scary to see the last 20 years how kids were coming out of school. When we were looking at colleges for her, I was so appalled that there was no protest against the Iraqi war on any of these campuses. People were just, they just didn't feel connected to what was going on. And now the excitement around Obama and the desire to get involved in, you know, local community efforts and put this passion towards really changing the world. This is the generation that's going to do it because he really cares about bringing them in. So
what does this mean to you?
It means a lot just because I feel like Obama's going to do a great deal for the international community. He's going to really improve our name in the international community. I'm studying abroad next semester in Chile, so I'm really excited to see how his impact changes our view, or how people view America.
Well, I missed the Martin Luther King thing. I was too young, so this right here is just at my time, Obama, so I'm here.
What do you do?
I'm a technician mechanic for the city of Baltimore.
What does that mean? What department?
Water, wastewater, 30 years.
So what do? You work down...
Patapsco Wastewater Plant Treatment. I weld, burn, all sorts of things. Mechanic.
Yeah. My name is Sharon. I'm close to 50. Not quite there, but I'm very excited about this experience today. I thought we would never have an African-American president.
Why not?
Because of all the things that we went through, the struggles of our people, and I didn't believe that this time would come, that I would see it in my lifetime. But I'm very excited. It's freezing out here, but it's worth it. Every minute of it.
Barack Obama!
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. That was a piece that Melody Simmons produced with Justin Levy, one of our producers who produced it. He's actually, Melody recorded it from the Baltimore's War Memorial Plaza Saturday when... Barack Obama stopped through on his whistle-stop tour to Washington, D.C. We're now joined by LaToya Peterson, editor of racialissues.com, who didn't freeze her tail off because she was at home watching. LaToya, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Nice to come back.
It was good to have you back. So you were home.
I was. I've been sick for the last 3 days. So I was like, I can do
this.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I can brave it. But then I was like, maybe not. I don't want to go and pass out and cause all that and problems. So I'm like, I'll just stay here in front of the TV and watch it.
So talked a bit about, I was reading some of the stream that you were doing on racialissues.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the people writing in were really, I mean, just blown away and amazed by what they experienced and saw.
I mean, everyone is thrilled. Even the people who couldn't be down there today in Washington, most people, you know, snuck off and used their computers to watch it at work or tried to listen in however they could. Like, at one point, I had got up to go get some soup, and I was at, you know, a big mall near me. And at the mall, they were piping in the ceremony and everything over the loudspeakers, and they had a big television set up in the food court
where
people were watching. Like, it's monumentous. What's going on, and just to actually see things happening. Like, yes, we understood we had him as president-elect, and yes, we understood we elected Barack Obama president, but to actually see him go for the ceremony, to see that swearing-in, to see, you know, the culmination of all the things that we had hoped and all the, and the culmination of all the civil rights struggles and all the things that we've been fighting for, and to see it manifest when, you know, Barack takes the stage and put his hand on the Bible and started to swear it in, that was an amazing moment. It's not the end by any means, but
right.
it does feel like a wonderful, you know, momentous beginning to 2009.
Especially, even if the Chief Justice got it wrong for a minute.
Yeah. Which is fine. That was a little awkward, but it was okay. It got done in the end. That was good. And it was great to hear his inaugural speech, because it really did set the tone for where we're going to take the country. I was glad to see that he mentioned Muslims.
Me too.
In his speech.
Yes.
Because that was a key point of contention in the campaign, and it felt like for a long time, I know the Muslim community was upset at Brock kind of backing off from that association,
mm-hmm.
backing off from their communities, backing off from reaching out because of the political backlash, and it's terrible. So to see that it's right back in there, now here we are on day one, it's really heartening. It's also heartening to see that we're renewing our commitment to being friends with other nations. To really extending that American goodwill abroad, because that's been sorely missing.
Now, that's a very powerful thing. LaToya, can you stay with us for a little while? You're going to be... Okay, good. As long as you're comfortable. I know you're not feeling real well, so it's, I appreciate it. But
okay.
Someone has called in from the MARC train, coming back.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Who is a volunteer for Obama during the campaign. And I have a note here saying her cell phone battery is low. So let's have a conversation with her together.
Oh, yeah.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And Carol Beck, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good. I saw your battery was low there from the note I got, so I wanted to get you on quick before we lost you.
Well, it was a magnificent day. There are not words to describe it. I'm sure you're hearing that from all your callers.
Well, talk about what it really meant for you. As a woman, as a political activist, as someone who volunteered for Barack Obama.
Well, I'll tell you, my thought is, you know, like many people today, I have been on that mall many, many times, not with so many people. And we've often been there angry and disappointed. And it was just stunning to be there, like joyous and just enthusiastic and happy and pressing against each other, but still kind and hopeful. A lot of tears were shed. A lot of us never thought we would see this day. You know, both to have someone of such vision in the
mm-hmm.
presidency, but of course, just to have the first African American president sworn in was quite stunning. And, you know, the crowd was packed full of people who, like I and my friends, just did our tiny little part, you know, in the Army. Lots, as you know, Baltimore exported tons of volunteers to York, Pennsylvania. We worked out of the Red Lion bed and breakfast in this magnificent volunteer operation.
Carol, do we still have you? Did we lose you? We lost Carol? I'm sorry. When she calls back, we'll try to get her back on. LaToya, before we go bring on this caller in, one of the things that Carol said there
mm-hmm.
was talking about the joyous nature of this event and what's going on. And I want to explore that a bit with you, and maybe our listeners as well, at 410-319-8888, which is that there is something very different about this
mm-hmm.
presidency, about the feelings wrapped around this presidency and the joyousness that just spreads everywhere. I mean, if you're in crowds of 100,000 people and they're jammed together tight like sardines in a can, listening to Obama and file out together, moving inch by inch through little teeny exits, which I experienced in Denver and my girlfriend experienced when she was in Northern Virginia at his last speech.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was smiling. Everybody was polite. Everyone was helpful. There's some kind of essence and air that's going on here that I think, sense that Obama exudes.
Definitely.
That is changing kind of the nature of what we're feeling in America. I've never experienced this before in politics.
Definitely. I mean, like, things like enthusiasm, hope, change. I remember during the campaign, people were talking about how, oh, they're just, you know, symbols. It's just talk. Talk is cheap. But really, you know, one of the best things about Obama is that he was able to tap into these things that we so sorely needed. And that, you know, for the last 8, you know, even 10 years, I would say, of the country, we've been going in this direction that's been increasingly negative, increasingly polarized, increasingly, you know, we just had issues, lots and lots of issues. And so it's great to have someone come aboard and say, you know, look, we're going to look at these problems realistically. We're going to have issues. We're going to have setbacks. We're going to have to work through these things, but we can do it, and we have the power to create change, especially at a time when so many people feel powerless. So to have that, to have this person talking about these ideas, help these ideas to spread more, and I feel like these ideas were just ripe to be spread from person to person. And we are finally able to go back to, I think, the way that America really wants to be, which is to have this connectedness, to have this unity, to have this sharing, and to have this new beginning. And that's why I feel like there's so much joy and enthusiasm floating around right now. Everyone's excited. Everyone's happy.
I think that's true. And, since you can stay with us a little bit, I want to bring another caller in at 410-319-8888, Cantrice, who's in her car, and she has some excitement she wants to share. Cantrice, please join us.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome. Good to hear your voice. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I agree with the call that you have now 100%. I was going to say, the thing that stands out the most for me is that he's a young man. And, you know, young people bring about fresh ideas, and they're not afraid to step outside the box and try something different. And that's what I can say I can appreciate the most about him, because, man, I feel like everyone's views, you know, the poor people, the middle class people, as well as the rich people, are going to be taken into consideration.
I think you're right. I think that's part of what people are feeling in this country. And, Kentries, I really appreciate you joining us. And please drive carefully, talk on the phone.
Okay, and thank you.
Thank you. I want you to stay with us.
Alrighty.
LaToya Peterson is with us right now. She's editor of racialicious.com. She'll be staying with us for a few more minutes after we come back from the break to continue her observations. I want to really probe her thoughts a bit more before she leaves us. And as we go to break, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. Over 70 years later, they're still there to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. We'll be right back with our guest, LaToya Peterson, editor of racialicious.com. Look it up on the web while we're on break, and join us at 410-319-8888 when we return. We'll be right back.
For we know that our patchwork heritage is a strength, not a weakness. We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers. We are shaped by every language and culture, drawn from every end of this earth. And because we have tasted the bitter swill of civil war and segregation and emerged from that dark chapter stronger and more united, we cannot help but believe that the old hatreds shall someday pass, that the lines of tribes shall soon dissolve, that as the world grows smaller, our common humanity shall reveal itself, and that America must play its role in ushering in a new era of peace.
Welcome back. That was one of my favorite pieces of today's inaugural address by Barack Obama. For this portion of our program, we're joined by LaToya Peterson, who is editor at racialicious.com. And she watched the inauguration on television from her home. She joins us again today, which is always a pleasure to have her on the air. I hope she comes on more and more. Our number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. LaToya, give me a sense of what you got from the speech, and let's start with the piece you just heard.
Well, since I don't think I heard the audio feed from which piece you played.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The entire piece. So what section did you play?
This is the piece where he said that we are a patchwork heritage is our strength, not a weakness, and we're a nation of Christians, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, and non-believers, and how America can be, because of our diversity, can be the kind of ushering in a new era of peace.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great to me. I mean, that's, I know, that's what you're fighting for, right? You're like, yeah, that one. But I do feel like that was one of the hallmarks of the Obama campaign, the fact that he was, one, ready to move our conversations about how we think about race and how we think about diversity forward, and really made an effort to be more inclusive of our changing racial makeup in the United States. While we were, you know, founded on this kind of black-white binary where, you know, African slaves were imported, Native Americans, who aren't normally mentioned, were kind of subject to genocide, and then whites were coming in to be the ruling class, to actually come in and mention, you know, no, there's more people involved who make up America. There's recent immigrants. There's people who have been here 2-3 generations. There's Latinos. There's Asians. There's Asian Americans. There's South Asians. There's all kinds of people who go into making our nation great. And the fact that he recognizes this was just an amazing achievement. I've been reading Gwen Ifill's The Breakthrough, which actually just dropped today, but I got an advanced copy, so I've been reading it. And one of the things that she notices is how post-civil rights generation leaders like Obama and other leaders who are around the nation, like she talks about Cory Booker and Devil Patrick and Adrian Fenty even, and talks about how they're kind of the next generation grabbing the baton and moving forward. And one of the things that they're realizing is that, you know, civil rights and the civil rights movement was amazing, and they opened all these opportunities that were not accessible for us within the course of a generation. So the things that our parents, you know, even like one of my friends, her father is old enough to have paid a poll tax. Her father, I'm 25.
Mm-hmm.
She's, I think, 27.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mm-hmm. it's not that far in the past.
No, it's not.
Things were happening. And then, you know, to have it come forward so far in 40 years is simply amazing. And one of the things that the breakthrough was talking about is how different the outlook is from civil rights generation leaders who are fighting to break down these boundaries, and for post-civil rights generation leaders who are running through this gate, like, okay, now it's open, we're going for it. And it's amazing to see how we're redesigning and redrawing coalitions in this new, in this kind of new era. It's not post-racial, but with the understanding that it's much more complicated than we originally thought.
I think you said some really powerful things here, LaToya. Did I interrupt you? Did you finish? I'm sorry.
I'd
really like to, for you to stay with us for as long as you can. So I enjoy your perspective, and I'm sorry that Megan, we let Megan Carpentier go, who loves your work a great deal from Jezebel.
Yeah, Megan's great.
So I mean, the women I've met through my show who are on the blogosphere are a really remarkable group of young people, and I'm just really honored that you all want to join me here. It's really a good feeling, and I think that's part of what this Obama world may mean. And you talked about the world that came before, and your friend whose father could have paid a poll tax. Well, I'm that old as well, and the beauty of what I'm seeing here, and I'm bring a friend of mine on who will introduce you and our audience to Doug Colbert, who is a professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law, who is there and has been a fighter for social justice his whole life and is of my generation, the civil rights generation, and that the thing that's going on here is that there's a cross-racial, interracial, cross-generational, cross-class lines movement that seems to have erupted and kind of given Obama's candidacy the boost it had, and also is like becoming this independent world that is very different than before because of that cross-fertilization.
Definitely. And it's, you know, we're at just a very interesting time in our development as a nation where we're deciding, you know, this is who we were and this is who we were founded on and this is what we've gone through, but who are we becoming? And, you know, because our nation's history has been so brief and so quick, we always haven't had the luxury to sit and reflect on where we're going, what we're doing, and then who's with us while we travel.
Right.
And I feel like one of the, you know, best things that's come about with this, you know, 2-year-long primary election cycle is the fact that a lot of people really got to put forth their ideas in a new form and really come and, you know, and actually be heard on the national stage, just like you started hearing articles about the Latino vote all of a sudden.
Right.
Not that Latinos haven't been here, but they weren't seen as like a viable political group until recently. The same thing with the Asian American vote. And then just as quickly, as news media was understanding that these new demographics were emerging and they could help influence this really close election, they were realizing that it wasn't quite that simple. And that, again, racial groups aren't necessarily monoliths, which is why you have groups like, say, the hip-hop Republicans, who don't identify necessarily as any one race in particular, but kind of a multicultural coalition that's moving forward with the youth of the Republican Party, which I've been watching with a lot of interest to see what they're going to do with that, because the Republican Party has a lot of issues right now with race and race and youth and representation in general. So I'm kind of amazed at what they're doing.
That would be a show I'd like to do. Maybe I'll do with you and some of those hip-hop Republicans and see what they have to say. That would be kind of fun to do.
As soon as I find someone who want to talk to me, I mean, I've got some good leads. I do. We're definitely a liberal slanting website, so there's definitely a comfort level we have to promise to come on and talk to us. But I feel like it's one of those things where this the time was ripe for this to happen. The time was ripe. And seeing how many people felt unheard, how many people felt disenfranchised, how many people felt like they couldn't believe in their government, there was no accountability, from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see how this all came together, it's simply amazing. It's just simply amazing. And particularly when you look at the crowd shots, when you look at the crowd pictures and you're looking at who's down on the mall.
It's America.
Who's walking around. Who's on the metro. Who's taking
right.
station space. You know, just seeing all the different types of people. I'm like, God, this is America. This is what we were looking for. That, you know, real America that they were bandying about during an election. No. This is the real America.
It's all of us. And it really is changing. I'm going to bring in a friend and colleague, Doug Colbert, to stay with us here with LaToya Peterson. Doug is the University of Maryland professor at the School of Law. As I said, longtime social and human rights activist who is in D.C. today. And whenever there's an event like this, you can't seem to keep Doug away. He's at everything. Doug, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. I could just listen to you and LaToya go on. I mean, really, the two of you have captured today, and having been there and really just being so impressed with the union between generations. I mean, I had so many important conversations with young people. An Indian college student named Jay and his family, who is talking so much about what he wants to be doing now. And then there were these two. There was a man named Carlos who, you know, was just captured by the people in the audience, and just looking around, you get a sense, as LaToya was saying, that not only this is the time, but it almost appears that this may be one of our last opportunities to get it right. And I say that because, you know, it's so obvious that we're in such a fundamental crisis now in our economic system and our foreign policy, and yet we have a chance now not to be talking merely about civil rights, but to be talking about human rights, and for our nation not just to rejoin the world of nations and lead, but to lead by example, to sign the human rights treaties and to ratify them and to live by the language of mm-hmm. them. And we've had so many setbacks. If we could do that, we could be looking at the third Reconstruction. We could be looking at the opportunity of really allowing democracy to work in action. But it's going to take more than our words and more than all of our good feelings. People are going to have to really reach out to each other, and communities are going to find ways of doing things together. And we're going to have projects in the area of public service, or humanitarian works, or ways in which we're not simply going to allow people to become part of a homeless population, or to know what it's like to lose a job. But we're going to have to figure out ways of bringing more justice, more political justice, more economic and social justice. And I am so encouraged by, you know, what I saw today. Of course, it's having spent the whole day there, it truly is inspirational, and I'm just really happy that I was able to get down to D.C.
We've just been joined by Doug Colbert, who was there in Washington today, professor of law at the University of Maryland. LaToya Peterson joins us as well. She's been with us for a good part of our show. She's editor at racialicious.com. Megan Carpentier was with us a little earlier. She's editor at Jezebel.com. Was at the inauguration today. The number here is 410-319-8888 to bring your thoughts on this really amazing, auspicious day, audacious day in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Write to us here at Steiner Show at gmail.com, 410-319-8888. Ed from Baltimore has a thought. Ed, you're on the air. How do you have? Is Ed there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You're on the air.
Yes, I just want to offer my perspective on. LaToya made some comments, suggesting that it was really kind of like an incredible thing that President Obama is acknowledging, you know, the contributions of Americans, independent of their race. And I think it's a little different twist on that perspective. It's just that we haven't had it. It's not that it's so incredible. We just haven't had anybody in the position that would take the blinders off and make that acknowledgement. So, I don't think it's really that special, but it's just that now we have somebody who can take the blinders off and see the fabric of America as it is.
That's a very fair comment. LaToya, what do you think about what I just said?
Oh, I totally agree. Because, again, it feels amazing that we shouldn't have to ask for these things. We do.
Exactly.
And it's, you're just so accustomed to having to fight every time to get your voice heard, to sit and point out these are all the accomplishments that we've done, to be called a fake American. I don't know if
yes.
you guys remember that part in the primaries where they're like, you know, there's real America and there's everybody else. We're going, wait a minute, what? Because you already know who's going to be excluded. And then it's part of that happening to have someone who actually can see America for what it really is, a coalition of a diverse group of people that is made stronger by that diversity. It shouldn't be amazing, but it is, and I'm just glad that it's happening. Period.
It's welcome, and it's long overdue.
Thank Definitely. You, Ed, so much for being part of the show today. And I just add to that, let me just say, there's a piece of news we just got. I want to tell everybody that Senator Kennedy's doctors, he collapsed today, you know, at the luncheon, and was taken away in an ambulance to the hospital. Senator Kennedy's doctors are saying he collapsed from fatigue. He's getting better. He's awake and answering questions. So I just wanted to share that with all of you. That news just came across the wire. Those of you listening can hear that. And I was thinking about what Ed was just saying, you know, and I'd like to hear what Doug and LaToya, I'm going to throw an idea out about this. I think that, you know, in my time in the 60s, being a political activist and really as a young person, not that I've stopped, but in that period of the 60s, America had a mythology of itself that built on kind of Dick and Jane books we grew up with in the 50s in schoolrooms. Two little white kids in a white picket fence and another white family with a spotted dog, and everything was lovely and beautiful. And Look magazine and George Washington chopped down the cherry tree, and we had this mythology about who we were as a people. And then when segregation was exposed to the majority of America because of the fight against it, and the war happened in Vietnam, and the contradictions of America started coming to the forefront, then America, our mythology of who we were, and every culture has to have its mythology, was exploded. And nothing has replaced it. And Americans have been fighting and battling, trying to figure out what replaces that definition of who we are as a people. I think the election of Barack Obama begins the discussion, even unconsciously, about what that definition is, about who we are. So I think that's why we're seeing somebody finally saying that America is all of us. And this could be part of our redefining ourselves. LaToya, and then Doug, and then we'll go back to the phones.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I think Ed's point is a very important one. What President Obama is allowing us to do is to speak in out for human rights for every person. It's Jimmy Carter made a very big impact on human rights when he was president, but he did not, in my opinion at least, did not reach as far or nearly as far as what President Obama is doing now. So he's giving us opportunity. He's actually presenting a challenge to us. And I think that if we are able to accept the challenge, and if we're able to put our words into action and into real hard work, we have an opportunity to come out of this crisis so much stronger and so much more united as a people. And if we can extend that to the international community by playing a leadership role in the human rights treaties, which we are not parties to all of them. We're one of two countries in the world that hasn't ratified the treaty that protects children, and the only other country is Somalia, and we're one of a dozen countries that hasn't ratified the treaty that protects women against discrimination.
I just want to let LaToya have a chance to come back with a comment as well before we run out of too much time here, because we're going to play another clip in about a couple of minutes. LaToya? I'm sorry, Doug.
Oh,
LaToya?
Mm-hmm. No, that's fine. No, definitely. Especially what Doug was saying, the fact that this does feel like a do-over. Like, you know, that we lucked up and we elected in someone in office who can't do it all by himself. But at the same time, there's this idea that we as Americans are going to have more say, more influence, and more control over what our government does, over what we do as a people. And unfortunately, this is taking place in a time of great crisis and great uncertainty. But at the same time, I feel like it's also a signal that these systems have been broken. These systems were breaking. These systems have been broken. It's not benefiting the majority of Americans to be this divided, to have this kind of stratification of wealth we were having all kinds of problems. And this kind of, again, it feels like a fresh slate has been put down, where it's not like we're going to solve all these problems instantly overnight, but we can actually start putting the work in and go, okay, what kind of nation do we want to be on the world stage? Mm-hmm. What kind of nation do we want to be for ourselves?
But before we get to the clip, I'm going to leave another listener in here as we talk to Doug Colbert, LaToya Peterson about this incredible day. Cliff, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Cliff, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I just tuned in a short while ago, and so I'm enjoying your conversation that I was able to hear of it. I'd say up until now, I have been pretty much a cynic. I've been one of those people, African-American male, living in the city of Baltimore primarily, who tended to think that sometimes, especially African people, people of African descent, tended to use French in the wrong place. As Fred Hampton Jr. once said, we say we too many times when talking about the country's national priorities. And at this point, I think my attitude is one of, I'll say, cautious optimism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a person who actually had voted for Cynthia McKinney, but hoped that Barack Obama would beat John McCain. And I figured it was likely that my vote wasn't going to make a difference one way or the other, simply because of the fact I knew Maryland was going to go for Obama. Had it been a battleground state, I might have done a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that a lot of times, especially on some of the networks yesterday when they were doing the Martin Luther King thing, and they were talking about the I Have a Dream speech, and they rarely go into the bad check part of Dr. King's speech. And they refer to his speech as having been, of course, the seminal speech of Dr. King and about economic empowerment.
Right.
And in reality, they very rarely mention the Beyond Vietnam speech, which I actually think is the most important one he ever gave.
This is the most powerful speech. And Cliff, I'm sorry, we only have like 30 seconds left before I have to hit a clip here.
Okay, well, very quickly, some people said that everything is going to change. I think that I'm glad that you're not going that far. Troy Davis's execution is not going to be stopped just because Obama was president. Political prisoners aren't going to be
Cliff, I'm sorry. I really want you to call back because I think that your thoughts are really important. I think you're right. But I need to thank LaToya
right.
Peterson for joining us, and we'll look forward to having her on very soon again. Editor of racialistas.com. LaToya, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mark.
And we'll be talking very soon. And let me play here now. We want to play it before we go out today, before we'll come right back after this. But I want to play you the end of Barack Obama's speech to us today, how he closed his thoughts to all of us.
Our challenges may be new. The instruments with which we meet them may be new. But those values upon which our success depends, honesty and hard work, courage and fair play, tolerance and curiosity, loyalty and patriotism, these things are old. These things are true. They have been the quiet force of progress throughout our history. What is demanded then is a return to these truths. What is required of us now is a new era of responsibility. A recognition on the part of every American that we have duties to ourselves, our nation, and the world. Duties that we do not grudgingly accept, but rather seize gladly, firm in the knowledge that there is nothing so satisfying to the spirit, so defining of our character, than giving our all to a difficult task. This is the price and the promise of citizenship. This is the source of our confidence. The knowledge that God calls on us to shape an uncertain destiny. This is the meaning of our liberty and our creed, why men and women and children of every race and every faith can join in celebration across this magnificent mall. And why a man whose father less than 60 years ago might not have been served at a local restaurant can now stand before you to take a most sacred oath. So let us mark this day with remembrance of who we are and how far we have traveled. In the year of America's birth, in the coldest of months, a small band of patriots huddled by dying campfires on the shores of an icy river. The Capitol was abandoned, The enemy was advancing. The snow was stained with blood. At a moment when the outcome of our revolution was most in doubt, the father of our nation ordered these words be read to the people. Let it be told to the future world that in the depth of winter, when nothing but hope and virtue could survive, that the city and the country, alarmed at one common danger, came forth to meet it. America, in the face of our common dangers, in this winter of our hardship, let us remember these timeless words. With hope and virtue, let us brave once more the icy currents and endure what storms may come. Let it be said by our children's children that when we were tested, we refused to let this journey end, that we did not turn back, nor did we falter. And with eyes fixed on the horizon and God's grace upon us, we carried forth that great gift of freedom and delivered it safely to future generations. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
I want to thank you all for joining me today here on the Mark Steiner Show to celebrate this incredibly important day. And it is powerful to all of us. And welcome to America, Barack Obama, President of the United States of America. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. More information and personal counseling, call 1-877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered by Jamar Jones. Our interns are Christina Arison and Judith Lloyd. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows or hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.